From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette. I'm Dave Gillette. Coming up on this week's show, stop burning and start recycling. That cry this week from hundreds of environmentalists who descended upon the state capitol to lobby the governor and lawmakers. They're unhappy with how state officials are handling New York's worsening garbage crisis. We'll tell you about that. Also, Helen Hayes, the First Lady of American Theater, was joined by fellow actors Colleen Dewhurst and Tony Randall for a day of lobbying in Albany. They're demanding millions be restored to the state's art budget. And our political analyst, Dr. Alan Chartok, will be here. He's joined by New York Post investigative editor Fred Dicker. All that and lots more on this week's Legislative Gazette. This week, for the 14th straight year, the State Assembly voted to restore the death penalty in New York. The vote was an overwhelming 99-44 margin, but the death penalty supporters doubt the electric chair will come back into use. Assemblyman Vincent Graber, who sponsored the death penalty legislation, said he doubted either the Senate or Assembly had the votes necessary to override Governor Mario Cuomo's veto. The Senate voted last month to restore the death penalty 40-20. The Assembly Budget Committee said this week that New York's fiscal problems are much worse than Governor Cuomo has said. The Assembly Committee projected a virtually stagnant state economy for the immediate future. The Assembly Ways and Means Committee says the state's estimated budget deficit for the current fiscal year is $245 million worse than Cuomo has said. That would bring the total 89-90 deficit to more than $1.2 billion. The $245 million will likely be added to the almost $700 million the state needs to borrow to balance its books. Meanwhile, a day after the Assembly released the report, the Senate released its own. Senator Tarki Lombardi is chair of the Chamber's Finance Committee. He says his findings, which are based on a Wharton Economic Associates estimate, varies from the Assembly's conclusions.
We know that the Assembly yesterday came out with their own in-house study, one that we're reviewing now ourselves, and they show that the deficit situation is worsening to the tune of about a $1.157 billion. The Wharton report is not as pessimistic as that, although they do recognize that there is a decline in the economy, that there's a decline in terms of the revenues based upon what we originally thought last year. However, their report is more optimistic, not only than the Assembly reports, but also than the governor's report. The variation that you're going to see in their report comes from two major issues. One being that dealing with revenues, and in terms of the revenue finding, it's their projection that revenues will be up $151 million above what the governor has projected in his February 22nd numbers. The governor, as you know, had in February 22nd had said that his deficiency was going to be $565 billion. That was his most current estimate that we've been working from. The revenues that Wharton projects, they feel are going to be up a total of $151 million, which is made up of $125 million in additional tax revenues, $20 million of additional lottery revenues, and $6 million in additional miscellaneous receipts.
Syracuse Senator Tarki Lombardi. Hundreds of environmentalists descended upon the Capitol this week. They say state officials are not handling New York's garbage crisis in an adequate way. Bruce Robertson reports.
New York State is burning and burying more waste, this despite a state mandate to favor recycling and waste reduction. That's what an environmental group charged this week in a report sharply critical of Governor Cuomo. According to Larry Shapiro of the New York Public Interest Research Group, state officials have been unwilling to address New York's massive solid waste crisis. The group is demanding an end to garbage incineration and wants to see a shift towards ambitious reduction and recycling efforts.
Whatever the words have been that have been coming from the governor and from the legislature, the reality has been that he's still developing incineration at a pretty fast pace, and that despite the statutory hierarchy, which says you're supposed to recycle, has recycling ahead of incineration, we see recycling proposals all over the state, some of which are getting approved, and we see at this very moment more garbage being incinerated than is being recycled. So I think, first of all, one of the things that we were there to say is that he really needs to stop incineration. When he tries to indicate that that incineration is some kind of short-term solution. In fact, most of these incinerator contracts are 20 years long. Communities are still entering into them with the support of Governor Cuomo's own Department of Environmental Conservation. DEC actually punishes communities, such as in Washington County, that have been trying to move to reject incineration and support recycling. And what we were trying to indicate to the governor, and we would have been able to do so had he stayed and listened to some of us, that whatever the words are as far as policy, the reality is that the state continues to push forward incineration and is not really doing very much recycling.
Shapiro also feels the governor has abandoned his commitment to use unclaimed bottle deposits to fund local recycling programs.
In order for the Environmental Bond Act to be considered a serious effort to address what many believe, I think, would be the most important environmental problem in New York State, this solid waste crisis, there needs to be funding at a level that's going to be able to really capitalize local recycling projects. And we would say that that's at a level that is similar to what would have been available had the governor continued to try to use the unclaimed deposits to fund recycling rather than just to go right into the general fund. So we're saying $700 million over a 10-year period, which would be $70 million a year, and that could be matched by local governments.
Nyberg is urging lawmakers and the chief executive to increase the recycling share of the proposed $1.9 billion environmental bond issue from $80 million to $700 million. The group has also asked that no recycling bond issue money be granted to those communities with operating garbage incinerators, this in order to provide an incentive to shut down the burn plants. Meanwhile, Governor Cuomo, who spoke with Nyberg officials, agrees that recycling is extremely important.
I agree that recycling should be our first emphasis. They did not know, frankly, all that we have done with recycling, and they were simply wishing to make the main point that recycling is better than incineration, and I agree. Unfortunately, you can't stop all the landfills, stop all the nuclear power, stop all the incineration right now. You can't do it. You would be suffocated by garbage if you did that. What you have to do is move as quickly as possible to recycling and waste reduction and more intelligent ways of disposing of waste and producing energy than we now have. And we're doing that in this state.
Governor Cuomo. Meanwhile, aides to the chief executive say that New York State is moving toward the goal of recycling 40% of its waste by 1997. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Bruce Robertson.
Environmentalists were not the only ones to come to the Capitol this week to lobby. As Inga Sarda reports, a host of well-known artists traveled to Albany to demand millions of dollars in proposed cuts be restored to New York's art budget.
I just think it interesting that after World War II, this was the only industrialized country that was not, that their arts were not immediately government supported. And I always find it interesting, and God knows we know, I mean no insult to anyone in this room, but when you want to represent your country at its very best, you send your artists over.
That was actress Colleen Dewhurst, who was among many prominent artists who traveled to Albany from New York City this week to lobby state lawmakers. At issue is Governor Cuomo's budget. The chief executive has proposed a 10% cut to the New York State Council on the Arts $50 million budget. That, according to Dewhurst, fellow actors Tony Randall, Helen Hayes, and author Kurt Vonnegut, is far too much. New York State Assemblyman Joseph Pelletier agrees. The Niagara Democrat chairs that chamber's Tourism, Sports, and Arts Committee.
10% of the arts budget, which is $5 million, will not in any way help to eliminate the $2 billion shortfall that we have this year or help the $3 billion anticipated shortfall that they talk about next year. So I think the 10% is, again, penny-wise and pound-foolish. It would be devastating to the arts in New York State because the arts and tourism are one and the same, and that being the second largest industry in New York State, which generates approximately $18 billion in economic development, cannot continually be decreased in funding because it's something that does not happen by itself. We have to make things happen, and the arts groups are the ones that make things happen and allow people to want to stay in New York State for not only 15 minutes to see the falls, but for days to see the shows, the theaters, the museums, and the different cultural events. So We're hoping that we can get the budget back in place and possibly start getting it increased to what it should be over the last 3 years.
The lawmaker agrees New York is facing tough budgetary times, but he says many groups are complaining that their 2, 4, or 6% increases are not enough. The council's budget has been cut the past 3 years. Some may ask, why is this so important? These artists say that theater, dance, and literature, the broad spectrum of art, is symbolic of a civilized, decent culture that can grasp and appreciate thought, beauty, and feeling. Do they believe their travels to the state capitol to speak with lawmakers will get that message across? Helen Hayes, joined by Dewhurst, Tony Randall, and many others, say they hope so.
I hope a great degree. That's why we all came up here in the middle of what we thought was a blizzard.
But, we were having a blizzard.
Down there, yes, it was very frightening, but we came.
But it might raise a great deal of money if we all happened to go down in that plane. But in memoriam, they would raise money.
God forbid.
God forbid, yes.
Yes, I do say God forbid. On the way back, it won't count as much, of course.
It seems so obvious and so exactly right, as Colleen Dewhurst has been explaining, about the necessity and the rightness of this money, and more, if it were possible, for the arts, the necessity that the arts are to the communities. But it's just trying to get that message through to those who are opposed to the idea.
It's too bad we have to go out and hunt for it and beg, yes. In other countries, they don't. As you know, the city of Vienna gives more to the Vienna Opera than our national endowment.
And while the budget is a primary concern, Senator Roy Goodman of New York City contends it's not the only important arts issue.
And finally, we want to indicate that money is not the only issue, but artistic freedom is perhaps an even more important issue today. We are all of a single mind, which is that the system under which panels of artists determine what constitutes quality art is a precious part of what must be preserved, and we will do everything in our power to combat any attacks on that concept and any attempts at legislative interference with the determination of what is appropriate art for the receipt of state subsidization.
You may recall a few weeks back on this program, some state lawmakers said they were pondering legislation that would restrict state funding to artworks they found offensive, a measure modeled after one sponsored by U.S. Senator Jesse Helms. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Inga Sarda.
Here with a look at some other happenings this week in state politics is Paul Rosenthal with the Legislative Notebook.
Governor Cuomo and state legislative leaders seem to be involved in a staring contest to see who will blink first on suggestions that New York raise its gasoline tax. Cuomo spokesman Gary Fryer says the governor was willing to consider the increase to help ease state budget troubles, but Fryer says Cuomo would only consider the plan if someone from the legislature proposed it. But legislative leaders refuse to take the bait. Jeff Taylor, spokesman for Assembly Speaker Mel Miller, says Miller will only consider raising gas taxes if Cuomo proposes it. And John McArdle, spokesman for Senate Majority Leader Ralph Marino, says the Senate's Republican majority is not considering the gas tax increase at all. The state's motor fuel tax is 8 cents per gallon for gasoline and 10 cents a gallon for diesel fuel. The tax brings in about $450 million a year. Meanwhile, in order to raise revenue, Cuomo is also considering a proposal to place a temporary surcharge on business taxes with an emphasis on the telephone company. The governor's idea is to tax interstate telephone calls, which could raise a projected $340 million. However, not everybody is happy with this proposal. The State Telephone Association, which represents everyone from New York Telephone to the Oriskany Falls Telephone Corporation, says the proposed higher telephone taxes would hurt New York State's business climate. The Empire State's top consumer and law enforcement officials this week said New York Telephone should not get a rate increase. State Attorney General Robert Abrams and Consumer Protection Board Chairman Richard Kessel testified this week before the Public Service Commission on the company's request for a $445 million rate increase. Abrams says the request is unjustified.
9X created subsidiaries that overcharged the New York Telephone Company for goods and services that it sold and reaped those enormous profits for 9X at the expense of the telephone company and ultimately you and I, the consumers, the business people who purchased these services, so as well as individual consumers. So that is really the key point of what is being said here, that there's been no justification at all for any of the increase that they have demanded. Indeed, we have found fiscal chicanery and financial manipulation. And finally, we have seen the Public Service Commission staff and the telephone company engage in a proposed settlement, which is in violation of the commission's own guidelines in terms of appropriate notice to the parties of this proceeding. The Attorney General and other interveners were not made participants of these negotiations, and the secret talks that produced the proposed settlement, therefore, are in violation of the Public Service Commission's own settlement guidelines.
Meanwhile, this week, Abrams proposed legislation he says will reduce credit card fraud. Abrams wants to prohibit businesses from writing customers' credit card numbers on personal checks used to make purchases. Spokeswoman Nancy Connell.
Well, there's a great concern by consumers about the use of their credit card numbers or the availability of their credit card numbers, because it's so easy then to take a number and, say, make a phone charge. Our office did a survey in New York City and in Albany. Now, this wasn't an exhaustive survey, but it did find that there are major retailers that continue to write a credit card on a person's check as ID for the check. And based on that information and based on, you know, complaints that our consumer frauds bureaus have gotten about this practice, the Attorney General has proposed this legislation that, and I should add this, the Attorney General is quite aware of the need of a merchant to have adequate identification when accepting a personal check. This legislation would allow a merchant to ask for a credit card as identification. What it would do, though, is it would prohibit the merchant from writing that identification on the back of the check, thus making it readily available to anybody.
According to Connell, some consumers have complained that businesses charge their credit cards when personal checks bounce. The subways are praying grounds for criminals, that claim from Queens Senator Serfin Maltese. He sponsored legislation approved by the full Senate this week that increases penalties for crimes committed on subways.
1989, as it turns out, has been a banner year for subway criminals. Felonies on the subways hit an all-time high. They did reach 16,658. Now, when you break that down, that's 45 felony crimes, serious crimes, crimes punishable by over a year in jail, every day on the subways. And that you know, it's not a play on words, but that's criminal. And I think there's something wrong with any civilized society, any municipal authorities that would permit that to go on and not do anything about it.
The Maltese bill mandates sentences of 2 to 10 years be added onto the sentence of a criminal who committed a felony on the subway. The former head of Governor Cuomo's drug treatment agency is off the state payroll. Julio Martinez, who quit under fire last year, officially resigned at the end of last month. Martinez quit in December, but was allowed to continue collecting his $87,000 salary, almost $2,000 a week, as a consultant to his replacement. Martinez quit after a report from Cuomo's Ethics Commission criticized the DSAS director for giving millions of dollars in state contracts to drug treatment programs run by his friends, even though those programs treated few drug addicts. Martinez has denied any wrongdoing. That's this week's Legislative Notebook. I'm Paul Rosenthal.
Joining us next is our political analyst, Dr. Alan Chartok. He spoke with frequent guest New York Post investigative editor Fred Dicker about a number of goings-on in state politics.
Yeah, Alan, everything's hot around here, but it's mainly the budget. There's some political talk around. There's some kind of personality talk. But the number one issue, we just got an assembly report. The number one issue is the budget. Mel Miller's Democrats in the assembly are saying the state's financial picture, get this, is even worse than the governor's saying. And within a day or so, we should be getting a Senate Republican report on the same question. And privately, even the Senate Republicans are conceding that things are very, very grim.
Now, of course, the New York Times has recently printed an article, Fred, which pointed out that this is a Northeast regional problem. So what's the political shakeout?
Well, it depends on how it shakes out. In Massachusetts, as we know, your home state, the political shakeout has been devastating for Michael Dukakis, the governor. Yeah. Right now in New York, we've just seen a poll as recently as a week ago, Governor Cuomo remains extraordinarily popular. However, I mean, things can change in politics. Right now, there's just a lot of people holding their breath. There's concern that some major New York industries may have second thoughts about staying here or about making new investments here. If that starts happening, if there's a kind of palpable symbol of the state's economic distress, then things could be getting worse politically for all the politicians and the governor in particular. But right now, there doesn't seem to be any immediate fallout, just a lot of nervousness.
Fred, reading your column in the New York Post every Monday or so, I get the idea that the Republicans are in real trouble trying to find an opponent for Fred Mario Cuomo. Thank you, Freddie.
You're absolutely right, Alan. I'm pleased to hear that you're a reader of my column. I mean, I try to give the inside picture on what's going on, and you know, you're right. The Republican Party in this state is in big trouble. It's been in trouble for years, but right now it seems to be in the embarrassing situation of having a real good issue to run on, the state of the state's economy, but having only a dearth of candidates, hardly anyone around, and there seems to be more people trying to run away from the nomination than there are trying to get it.
Okay, let's go for a little checklist. Rudy Giuliani.
Rudy Giuliani seemed like a hot prospect in January. That heat has really cooled. Most people think now that he's not interested in running. He's interested in keeping his name alive for some future electoral effort.
What's a Herbert Holland?
Good question. Herb Holland has been around here aggressively campaigning for governor. That's the positive side from the Republican point of view. The negative side is nobody knows who he is. He's a down, well, I guess he would be a suffering New York insurance man with no track record in politics, which means he has virtually no chance whatsoever of getting a nomination. But he's having fun. And one should, I think, encourage citizens like Mr. Holland to get into the fray and mix it up.
Well, certainly, even the very worst, all you do is get your insurance company known around the place.
Alan, I think you have a certain talent for promotion, and I think you've touched on something important there.
Okay, what's an Evan Galbraith?
Well, that may be the sort of white knight, dark horse, or however you want to put it for the Republican Party, an unknown entity, but certainly someone with a true pedigree. A Yale graduate, very bright investment banker, President Reagan's ambassador to Paris, or to France, of course. Very knowledgeable man. He says he wants to run. He's got one little problem. He's lived out of New York so much that he may not qualify for the residency requirement, which is 5 years in New York. He's in court right now, should have a decision in 2 weeks. If it's in his favor, Alan, he says he's going to run.
Fred, I've seen some interesting reports switching to Washington for a moment, showing that Alphonse D'Amato has amassed a fairly large amount of information, which indicates that this little trouble he got into on where the pipeline would be sited may have been either inaccurate or not correct. Fred,
good point. I've looked at this question. You know, I'd be the first
In other words, Fred, if I can just continue
sure,
a second,
please, sorry.
That D'Amato has gotten a bad rap and that the New York Times may have really given him an unfair rap here.
You're not suggesting that the New York Times would ever do anything unfair, are you?
Well, maybe not purposely.
I agree. Look, I mean, it's happened before. It's happened in other papers where politicians do come up on the wrong end of the stick in terms of fairness, that sometimes, for whatever reason, sometimes maybe to get a politician, other times through accident or ignorance, politician turns out to have been wronged by the press. I've listened to Senator D'Amato personally and to his staff people explain this complicated pipeline issue, and I think it's possible that he's right. In fact, many of the decisions that were involved in locating this gas pipeline in the Hudson Valley off of Dr. Joyce Brothers' property were made by state agencies, including the Public Service Commission, and there was a great deal of local government input. It may not have been D'Amato's doing, notwithstanding the fact that he's been linked to another person whose land was affected by the pipeline, has been a heavy contributor. But, you know, in federal elections, Alan, we both know, you can only give $1,000.
No, you can't give much money.
Right, and even if it's $50,000 or $60,000, as it is in the governor's race, I don't believe these politicians of, you know, enormous stature, Governor Cuomo, Al D'Amato, would, you know, give away their integrity for a $50,000 contribution.
Because it's not worth their careers.
Absolutely, and these are people who have to deal all the time with big money givers, and if the word got around that it was that easy to buy their action, the word would spread and it would get out, and they wouldn't have a career, as you suggest. So I don't think it works that simply. I think Al D'Amato, rightly or wrongly, has gotten some terrible raps recently for intervening on behalf of people who have been longtime friends. And virtually everyone, including Governor Cuomo, concedes that Al D'Amato is a tireless worker and tends to try to help people who he's been friendly with.
Political analyst Dr. Alan Chartok speaking with the New York Post's Fred Dicker. We've heard a lot about New York's budget woes, and this week the State Communities Aid Association presented an alternative to Governor Cuomo's proposed budget. As Brian Shields reports, it says it can reduce spending and increase revenues.
Russell Sykes is a senior policy associate for the group. He says the proposal known as the Fair Financial Plan can cut spending dramatically and increase the state's tax base.
We certainly would like to look at a variety of areas on the spending side, more so in restraining some of the growth in the capital budget, more so in looking at areas like the Office of Economic Development, where it appears that a very great deal of spending could be slowed down and certain impractical programs could perhaps be phased out. There are certain savings that could be made in general state charges, and there are certain areas where there is serious question as to whether public funds ought to support certain things. For instance, the Office of Science and Technology, the Roosevelt Tram, certain commissions, the Olympic Regional Development Authority, all of these we could look to change to privatize support. So our recommendations of about $490 million in spending restraint are very targeted and focused in those areas. We're trying to eliminate overlap in certain areas. And I think a consistent theme throughout is that I think you can reduce state spending. You need to do that for two purposes. One, because we have a deficit situation. Two, because there are other areas where we need to be increasing spending.
Sykes also says his organization's plan, if adopted, could increase New York's tax base by millions.
We also have traditionally been very concerned about the state's narrowing revenue base. We see major fall-offs in corporate revenues, bank tax revenues, the personal income tax revenues, and we see, in spite of the governor proposing a number of revenue options for the fiscal year 90-91 budget, just last week we saw one of the two major credit raters basically put New York on a very precipitous edge of having its bond rating lowered on the market. We're terribly concerned that the revenues in the governor's budget are not significant enough, that we have to go beyond simply freezing the tax cut. And so we've recommended close to $1.3 billion in additional options on the revenue side that we would urge the legislature to seriously consider. They do not raise tax rates for any taxpayers. What they do is broaden the tax base of the Article 9A corporate franchise tax by closing certain loopholes that are non-productive and really are a luxury we can't afford. They also do similar things to the bank tax, and they expand the base of the sales and use tax to include a number of service consumption items such as legal fees, consultant fees, architectural fees, and so forth. We're terribly concerned that the state's fiscal footing is very precarious and that we need to move forward now and take seriously, very seriously, this deficit situation.
Russell Sykes, senior policy associate for New York State's Communities Aid Association. He says he hopes the legislature and Governor Cuomo will at least consider some of the measures laid out in the alternative budget. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Brian Shields.
And that's it for this week's Legislative Gazette. It's produced by Inga Sarda with technical assistance from Phil Sluzars. The program is made possible with grants from the Legislative Gazette, the newspaper about state government. Subscription information available at 518-473-6482. And Empire Information Services, serving New York and New England with electronic news release distribution. For the Gazette, I'm Dave Gallettly.